Good morning. Today is Thursday, June the 25th, 2020. This is John Richardson speaking with you from Toronto, Canada. And this is the second podcast that I am doing this morning, dealing with issues affecting renunciation of U.S. citizenship. In this podcast, we are going to discuss how the source of your income, or more specifically, how the extent of your U.S. source income would affect the renunciation decision. Does it make sense to renounce? Does it not? How can the fact of U.S. source income complicate that decision? And joining me again, welcoming back Karen Alpert of FixTheTaxTreaty.org fame. And Dr. Alpert, as well as running that blog, is a finance professor in Australia. So we will be in, I believe, the best possible hands today to guide us through this difficult topic. Welcome, Karen, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, John.
Okay. Well, you know, if you were to Google renounce U.S. citizenship, you'd see all these ads coming up. We'll help you with renunciation, renounce the right way, U.S. citizenship is horrible, blah, 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 blah. But it has become very, very clear that the question of whether to renounce U.S. citizenship is not primarily political. It is primarily, I think, financial. And not only does it have to do with U.S. taxation as a general matter, but it also seems to me that the question of what your source of income will be after you renounce should be a major factor in your decision, for the very simple reason that by renouncing U.S. citizenship from a U.S. tax perspective, you are moving from citizen to being a non-resident alien. And therefore, it seems to me that a vitally important question would be, how is U.S. income taxed to non-resident aliens? Would you agree that that's going to be important?
Yeah, it's going to be really important, John, because a lot of times the U.S. actually imposes higher taxes on non-resident aliens than it does on citizens when we're talking about U.S. source income. So, you know, as a quick recap, if you're a non-resident alien, only your U.S. source income is taxed by the U.S. So if you have no U.S. source income, you can turn the podcast off. You're not going to have to worry about this at all. But there are a lot of people who have some U.S. source income, some local source income. And when you're doing the planning, you've got to think about how you're going to be taxed on that after you renounce as a non-resident alien.
Right. Now, when I say, or when you say, think about it, consider it, I would like to add that I think you actually get out a tax return. You do some mock tax returns to see what this actually means, because I agree with Karen that for certain types of people with certain types of income, hard to believe, but by renouncing U.S. citizenship, they can actually increase the amount of tax they pay to the United States.
Yeah, one big example that I've heard a lot from people in Australia is U.S. Social Security. So if you're a U.S. citizen, your Social Security is taxed at progressive tax rates. You end up not paying an awful lot of tax on that at all. But if you're a non-resident alien, the U.S., well, they're only going to tax 85% of your Social Security, but they're going to tax that 85% at 30%. So you're going to pay 25.5% of your Social Security benefits to the U.S. in taxes if you're not a U.S. citizen or U.S. resident.
Right. Now let's pause on that. You know, that's a thank you for that horrific example to start us off, Karen. But it is a very, very good example. And now what, Karen, I think what you're describing is how the Social Security would be taxed to non-resident aliens under the Internal Revenue Code, under U.S. domestic law.
Absolutely. And there are some treaties that exempt it. But Australia is not one of those.
Canada is one of them, right? So this is quite interesting.
So that means that any advice you get needs to be specific to the country that you're living in.
Absolutely. And to make a point that, you know, to reinforce a point that you have made repeatedly, that, you know, for all of these matters, I think it's extremely important to make sure that you get advice from a professional who's in your country as well. It is
you need to consider both countries' taxes, not just the U.S. So you might find that the U.S. that the tax treaty exempts some of your U.S. income from U.S. taxation. That doesn't mean it's exempted that U.S. income from your local taxation.
That is exactly right. And if I may just add to this, this over the last year or so, maybe just because I've been thinking about this more, maybe more of this has been popping up, but I have read about a significant number of instances where, in fact, one was from Australia. Somebody who moved from Australia to Canada, believing that because his pension income was not taxable in Australia, his Australian pension income was not taxable in Australia, but he became a tax resident of Canada, where all of a sudden his Australian pension income that was not taxable in Australia was taxable in Canada. You know, this obviously should have been avoided.
I mean, and similarly, if you move from the U.S. to Australia with a Roth IRA or a Roth 401k, thinking that, oh, well, that's going to be tax-free when I withdraw it because that's the rules in the U.S. No, Australia doesn't follow those rules at all. And it will be taxable when you withdraw it in Australia.
Yeah, and interestingly,
higher Australian tax rates.
Yeah, exactly. And to do the juxtaposition with Canada, you know, the fifth protocol of the Canada-U.S. tax treaty has special rules for Roth IRAs that actually make it advantageous as a general principle for U.S. citizens to keep those, move to Canada, and even avoid Canadian taxation on them. So, you know, the starting point may be the Internal Revenue Code in the U.S. It obviously is the local tax legislation, Australia, Canada, whatever. But it is amazing how different these treaties are from country to country when it comes to this type of income, pension income, etc. It's shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so bad that, you know, I mean, let's imagine a U.S. citizen living in the United States comes to somebody and says, how will I be taxed as an American abroad? The answer is, I don't know. It depends what country you move to because of these treaty provisions, right?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, absolutely. Depends on what country you move to.
Okay. All right. So you started us off with a very, very good example. So you're thinking of renouncing U.S. citizenship. You need to get out some returns. You need to analyze how your income is treated after renunciation by both the Internal Revenue Code, which you've demonstrated can be more punitive. Obviously, in your country of residence, and you want to see what treaty provisions may apply, right?
Right.
Okay. What other thoughts do you have on this?
So you need to make sure that whoever's paying your the income to you for your U.S. source income knows what country you're living in, because generally the rule is that they in the U.S. they will withhold 30% on these U.S. source income, but if your treaty says lower, say like 15% on dividends or something, then the company that's paying you the dividends needs to know that. And the way that you inform them of that is to file a form W-8-BEN. So you want to file a form W-8-BEN before you get any payments after you've renounced, so that the payers know that you're a non-resident alien now and that and what treaty rate they should be applying.
Okay. Absolutely right. I'm going to make a suggestion. I'm going to make a statement, and I'd like you to comment on my statement, okay? First statement, non-resident aliens, in other words, a U.S. citizen who renounces, becomes a non-resident alien who's living primarily or almost exclusively off U.S. source income, may be worse off by renouncing. Yes or no?
Absolutely, they may be. They need to run the numbers, though, to see.
Absolutely. Okay, in other words, this is dangerous stuff. You better figure it out. And this is not something where you get the answer off the internet, correct?
Well, it's not DIY because every treaty, like we said, is different. And a lot of these things are highly dependent on facts and circumstances, which means there's no tick box that you can do to see exactly what the result's going to be.
Right. Now, we've spoken a lot about treaties today. My next statement to you, non-resident aliens may no longer have the benefit of various treaty provisions that protect certain U.S. inheritance from inheritance tax in other countries.
My understanding is that's correct, but that does not apply in Australia because Australia does not have an inheritance tax.
Agreed. It does. Yeah, of course, it would only apply in countries where there are inheritance taxes, but there are quite a few of those out there.
And so a few of them do have treaties that provide that if a U.S. estate tax has been paid, that country's, or even if it's subject to the U.S. rules, even if it's under the threshold, that the inheritance tax, the local inheritance tax, does not need to be paid.
Right. But those treaties generally apply to people who are U.S. citizens.
Right.
Okay. Next statement. Again, thinking about death, I know that's upsetting, but continuing on, you're thinking about the death. There are clear differences under the estate tax rules between how U.S. citizens are treated and how non-resident aliens are treated with respect to U.S. situs assets. Can you comment on that?
True. Any U.S. assets that are to be transferred after death could require that estate and or gift tax be paid, or estate tax be paid in the U.S. And so for non-resident aliens, the threshold for estate tax is $60,000 as opposed to the 11 some odd million dollar threshold for U.S. citizens and under the estate tax rules. So, and when Congress doubled the estate tax exemption in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, they did that only for U.S. citizens and residents, not for non-resident aliens.
Okay. Statement. Here we go.
The other thing that we should note, though, is that there are a small number of countries with estate tax treaties with the U.S. that where those residents of those countries could get benefit of the higher 11 plus million estate tax exemption.
Right. And Canada would be one of them. It's actually.
And so would Australia, even though Australia sees the treaty as no longer important because Australia no longer has an estate tax. The U.S. sees it as still in force.
Mm-hmm. Although the U.S. has a large number of income tax treaties, it has a relatively small number of estate and gift tax treaties. I think it's only 17 or 18 countries. But they are the countries. It's not random countries. They are countries that have significant inheritance taxes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those treaties also have treaty tiebreak provisions, for example, the U.K. one. Okay, final statement here would be this. Would you say that the people who are considering renunciation with not only a lot of U.S. source income, but a lot of U.S. situs assets should be extremely careful with this decision?
I need to be very careful. Very careful.
Very careful. I think that's one.
If you're relying on your U.S. source income to support you during your retirement, then you need to do some really, really careful planning before you renounce.
I think that that is exactly right. You know, people who are in that category have issues that extend well beyond the issues that affect accidental Americans or, you know, immigrants from the United States, people who are integrated into the tax systems of other countries. So it is very clear that this is an area where one size certainly does not fit all. And mistakes, you know, are just extraordinarily, extraordinarily costly on this. All yes. Right. On that note, I'd like you to invite you to add any further comments. Otherwise, I think we've made the point that we wanted to make in this. Any further thoughts, Karen?
I think that's really it for this segment, which is about what happens after you renounce. I think this podcast needs to be listened to in conjunction with our previous one, which talks more about exactly how a non-resident alien is taxed, and because that's going to have some bearing on the impact of all of this on someone who has renounced.
Agreed. All right. By the way, for those who don't read Karen's site blog, it's fixthetaxtreaty.org. And it includes a wealth of important information, much of which is actually written by Dr. Alpert, who is, in my humble opinion, one of the best writers and thinkers in this area. So thank you very much, Karen, for speaking with me today.